Welcome to the American Horror Story Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for FX's American Horror Story. This episode is for episode 603, chapter 3 of the season 6 My Roanoke Nightmare Saga.
As it's called so far.
I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And what did you think of last night's episode?
I think that Ryan Murphy has really dug himself into a hole so far. He's gone on record of telling us that, oh, we kept it a secret for so long, but you guys are in for the real surprise, and then you're in for the real, real surprise. So I don't know. I'm kind of bored with this season, or I'm sort of bored with this story arc if it's going to change. I think that specifically Shelby being just this annoying person who believes and is frustrated with people who don't believe as well as she does, along with her being non-believing in people who see things along the lines that she is seeing. I think that she's an unbelievable character, and it's just...
Do you think, so what would your reaction be if you did not know that Murphy had opened his big fat mouth and said, oh, you know, just wait until I blow your minds here directly?
I don't know. I might feel the same way. I think I would still be just annoyed with Shelby's character, especially with what she does at the end of the episode.
She's the worst. Like, she's the absolute several worst. People jockey for the worst in this episode. Lee, I leave my baby girl in the car for 5 minutes, and she either cooks her brains out in the summer heat or is abducted or something. Or Shelby, you know, I saw my husband fucking a demon woman in the woods where I've seen many, many disturbing visions and visuals, and I'm instantly going to
betray him and the whole family. Like, if I saw you having sex with a stranger in the woods, let alone, like, a wood nymph, and two hillbillies were masturbating and you knew they were watching, I would think Aaron's been drugged. Someone has taken advantage of him, and I'm not going to instantly blame you.
Or I'm dreaming.
Or I know that I've seen some really fucked up shit that I can't corroborate, right. So this might be part of it.
Okay. It's funny because I thought this was where the season kind of perked up. I thought the first half of this episode was I was getting really tired of the Lee and Shelby and Matt parade and all that kind of stuff, and it kind of peaked during their discussion of her... other child that we didn't know about. But Cricket showed up, and I thought he was funny and kind of oily and entertaining, and his interplay with the ghost was interesting, and I thought the, you know, delving into the Roanoke colony was kind of interesting. So the second half of the episode kind of reinvested. It little clunk at the end with Shelby's reaction, but I kind of think that maybe we're supposed to understand that she's being possessed.
No.
I mean, that's what I'm telling myself, because that would make her... Because
you want to believe that that kind of horrible person doesn't exist in the real world?
Well, just like, you know, she's been so... She keeps on flip-flopping about, I want to leave, I want to stay, I want to... And I just wonder if something demonic is happening, because, again, that just seems unreasonable that with all the things that she's experienced... That she sees this unbelievable thing happen and she instantly thinks, oh, my husband's cheating on me.
I mean, one thing is clear that she has brought some bias about Lee into their relationship.
Uh-huh.
And that is definitely a part of it.
All right. Well, let's get into the episode. It opens up with Lee opining that there's no pain like losing a child. And Lee just can't believe the cops aren't being more helpful about this situation, because they're all like, boy, gee whiz, you guys show up and all this crazy stuff starts happening. None of it can be explained.
I mean, what kind of thing is that to say to a grieving mother?
It's bad. It's bad.
No. That's something I would believe them saying to Matt or Shelby independently, yeah. But...
Especially when... I don't know. I don't. I mean, because I could see a rural cop saying this to someone, but I feel like that if they know that Lee is also a police... But then again, they might have heard through the grapevine that she's... Because she's from North Carolina herself, that she's kind of disgraced and kicked off the force.
You think that'd be a pretty big news story, especially just within the state.
Right. Cop causes car crash and kills someone she didn't kill him, he commits suicide, but who knows what
these people are claiming all these wild things, and now they bring in a drug addict into the situation. whose daughter goes mysteriously missing. I could see a reasonable doubt there.
But she's starting to leap to conclusion that they're in bed with the hillbillies who took Flora, which I actually think is plausible.
By the end of the episode.
She says after 36 hours, a missing child's odds are cut in half. After 72 hours, it drops a 30% successful recovery. It says something truly disturbing that 33,000 kids go missing in this country.
That's what it said.
No, it's at any one time. There's 33,000 missing. So there's like this window of kids that are missing. And are they still missing if they're found dead? Because, no, you know, but that's still missing. Like a shocking amount of children.
That's a lot.
And you're going to hear a lot about this massive search team that's canvassing the woods. But you're really only going to hear some bloodhounds in the background and see Matt, Shelby, and Lee. Which right. I'm like... I guess you're trying to save budget for the pig special effects, all the pigs that you have to buy. But damn, couldn't you hire like 20, 30 extras for an overhead scene of like people tromping through the woods? Like we got like one or two people taking some kind of flyer from Lee, and that's about it. I wanted to see a search party. Damn it,
you can't have the three of them huddle around this. What do you call this? This insignia. This
right
sacrifice. Whatever you call it, you can't have the three of them huddled around it and then a bunch of extras hamming it up behind them. You can't afford
I just want an establishing shot of them tromping through the woods with like your standard, you know, body search line or whatever.
Did we? I don't know.
So they find that they're traipsing through the forest, these three. There are no cops, no other volunteers that we've heard so much about. Don't even see a bloodhound anywhere. They find, and they're like just all together in a tight knot. They're not like spaced apart 100 yards in visual range like you'd think they would be. But they find Flora's doll ripped apart, and like its body's there, but its head's been replaced with pig head, and its like arm appendages have been replaced with pig appendages. And Shelby goes to touch it, and Lee forbids her because she might contaminate the evidence. And then 100 yards down the path, they find a farmhouse that has another pig doll sacrifice. And Lee rushes in and contaminates the whole thing. Like, you'd think that's such... I mean, what the hell?
I don't think so. I think that if you think that there's a possibility your daughter's inside, that precedes any interest in...
I guess. Like, you're right. Because she could be in there, whereas obviously she can't be underneath the pig.
Right.
The pig doll. So I guess that... I retract my critique of the inconsistent police work. They don't find Flora or anything. This house is a mess. It's got maggoty stuff everywhere. It's got severed goat heads, satanic-looking goat heads, and the non-functional refrigerator. There's buckets of piss and God knows what laying everywhere. No Flora, but they do disturbingly hear some grunts and groans, and they find two feral boys suckling a pig that may be alive. Is it alive or dead?
I think it's alive if it's still producing milk.
Well, I mean, but it had like, I thought it looked like its throat was slit or like it was wearing a collar that was biting into its throat or I don't know. I
didn't see any of that.
Hard to tell because those big fat pig mums just kind of lay there anyway.
You sound like Donald Trump.
That pig was a pig. She'd gained 20, 30 pounds.
Since she gave birth.
That's right. Yeah. No Miss Pig America her. Interestingly, everyone assumes that this is the Pokes. Like, I don't think there's any evidence.
And up until last week, I think you would have been one of those people.
I'm repping the Pokes are heroes.
I don't think, although
now that they're masturbating watching Devil Woman.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they're squarely pinning those two boys as being a part of that family.
Right.
And I don't know if the cops are just taking their inference.
Right.
The Shelby, Matt, and Lee inference, but... The two hillbillies that we know masturbating at the end of the episode makes it seem like that's a reasonable conclusion.
But why? Because
it was obviously all just an illusion, so I don't know. Shelby wanted to see or believe?
It seems like it's just as reasonable to assume that these boys are their victims than they are their family.
Right.
That's what I guess my only thing is, why leap to thinking that this is their family and this is how they treat their family? Like, these could just be abducted children that have been, like, I know that's not what you want to hear if you're a Lee, but these could be the victims as it's inarguable they're victims. Like, this is, like, classic neglect. They are fucked up. So everyone assumes it's a hoax, like I said. Mason comes in while the social worker is trying to interrogate, or not interrogate, but get information out of the children, and he's flipping out, and he's wanting to go interrogate the boys himself. I'm like, what, are you going to beat up a bunch of feral children?
Right.
You're going to beat the story out of them?
You might also be victims, just like your daughter.
Right.
What reaction is that?
The social worker's working the Hershey bar angle, and unfortunately, they don't know much English. The only thing they can scream, and I thought they said chocolate, but it turns out that they're screaming Croatan.
Oh, yep.
So that was a hard one to understand.
Yeah.
And Matt says no one knew what it meant, but they come to understand it was a warning. Now I think it's interesting that later this show can't keep from contradicting itself. Everyone in North Carolina knows the story of the lost colony of Roanoke.
Everyone,
and yet no one. Here's the word Croatoan. Again, I'm from Indiana. I was familiar enough to, you know, I know about the Roanoke, right, and Croatoan. Like, if you're from North Carolina and you're supposed to, everyone knows the story and that's a ghost story everyone tells, like, seriously, you didn't hear Croatoan and think, oh my God, this has something to do with the lost colony of Roanoke?
I don't know.
You have to have Cricket there with the ghost lady explaining it all to you?
I feel like there might be better ghost stories. I mean, that was, what, 300 years ago?
Plus, yeah.
Yeah. So I think there might be better updated ghost stories.
There might be a fresher ghost story than something from the 1620s.
I've heard of the lost colony of Roanoke.
Uh-huh.
I had heard of that before this season. The specific word Croatoan, I wasn't familiar with.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I just the wood carving of the guy in front of the Croatoan going like this really stuck out of me in my grade school history book. But anyway. It's late in the third day because they're back out in the woods looking, and Lee's thinking that Flora is probably super dead. So on a meta conversation level, what do you make of Lee's reaction to the possibility that they were looking for a body? Because she's like all choked up. And I thought, like, I'm watching this trying to glean information. I'm like, okay, if I'm a parent whose child actually didn't die, I don't think I'm choked. If she recovers Flora, I don't think I get that choked up talking about this situation.
Well, here's the thing, is Lee also has already lost a child to these similar circumstances.
So you don't think there's any conclusive information you can glean from her reaction to the story?
All right.
Because she does. She breaks down and has a hard time choking out the fact that they might not be looking for a little girl, but they might be looking for a body at this point. Later back at the house when they're starting to call it quits because they've been at this for 3 days with no sleep, Mason flips out and accuses Lee of stealing Flora because he knew that she knew that she would never get to see her again and that she's stashed her somewhere, and as soon as people quit looking, she's going to flee to Mexico or some shit. Lee can't believe she's being accused of this. They get in a scuffle. Mason shoves Lee to the ground. And everybody's kind of like shocked, and he's like, oh, my bad, just a little light domestic abuse. And they decide that since everyone's on edge and haven't slept for 3 days, they should try to get to bed. Unfortunately, in the middle of the night, they're awakened by the police to call them to the scene of a man who's been tied to a wagon wheel and set on fire. Turns out that it's actually Mason.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he's identified by some, I think, ring.
So that's the reason you get class rings. That's the literal only reason to buy a class ring.
Right,
so
right.
So you can be identified
after you
die.
Why were we just discussing that of
Your
late?
Father brought it up.
Yeah, but why was he discussing it?
Because he's talking about how he made a wedding ring 3 times for your mother.
Or something, but something came out with class rings and something with my sister.
Yeah,
and
your sister traded in like 2 diamond rings instead of getting a class ring. And
okay.
Well, she's the smart one.
Super interesting for the podcast people.
Yeah,
but
you're the one that insisted on me telling the story.
Well, I thought it would go to something interesting. I'm wrong.
It did not.
Super
did
wrong.
Not.
Sorry
not
about
all.
That. My not bad. My bad. I'm going to shove this topic to the ground. So
I'm gonna set it on fire.
Matt discovers via his nifty IP camera setup that Mason left the house. 10 minutes later, Lee follows him out the door, and she doesn't return until 4 hours later. This looks really bad.
And
her
house suddenly smelled like a bonfire.
Yeah.
You know how it sticks to your clothes?
Yeah, you know, or like the smell of burning human hair.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's like, that's just a very pungent odor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about how bad it looks when Lee comes in and says, I can't believe that you're thinking I might be a murderer with a bunch of suggestive evidence that might suggest that I am a murderer. And Matt says, you know, and she says, it's obvious that I'm not welcome here. And Matt says, you're right. And I'm like, oh, right on. We're actually moving along this. We're moving the storyline along. And he's like, he's like, you're right. We're all not welcome here. And why are we even trying to stay around? Someone's trying to tell us to leave. And I'm like, okay, well, we're back to that saw. And then a sprightly man named Cricket shows up and walks through their front door. He is a psychic and says that a spirit called him here. He has experience working with the FBI, and they're able to verify this on the internet. And he has stories where he has helped find missing children all over the country. And they're
particularly only for wealthy parents, though.
Apparently,
that's
so
that's the interesting
that hook comes later.
They missed.
But they're all pretty skeptical until he leads her to the cubbyhole, and he's got this like echolocation thing with his little silver tipped cane. He leads her to the cubbyhole where Flora was last seen talking to her ghost friend, and they find a ghostly bonnet, or the half Kathy Bates bra, whichever you believe. and he says, your daughter is with a spirit named Priscilla. And Lee's like, Priscilla, that's her pretend imaginary girl. And, you know, he's like, no, it's actually a ghost. Shelby eats this shit up, as you'd expect, some kind of granola crunching,
well,
yogurt
Lee
slurping yoga hippie.
Too. I mean...
No, Matt's not having anything.
No, I said Lee was eating it up. Eating it up.
I mean,
she's got information that I don't think she's shared with Shelby and Matt, and that is that her imaginary friend's name is specifically Priscilla, and she already found that bonnet before. I don't think she shared that information.
No, I mean, like I said, I'm a skeptical person, but I think if I was confronted with the evidence shown in this episode, at some point I'd be like, okay. All right, this seems maybe like it's legit. So they decide to have a seance to try to contact this Priscilla. And I have to say that this like possession and spiritism stuff actually does kind of still creep me out and scare me.
Really?
I think it's because like that is something that I used to actually believe when I was practicing my religion.
Yeah.
So like... it's like a vestigial fear, you know? I don't know. But it does creep me out. Maybe that's why I find this episode particularly affecting.
Right.
But he's doing this, you know, he's calling out for Priscilla, but instead he gets the butcher, Kathy Bates, who steps forwards and declares that all who trespass on her land and mean to do her and hers harm, she considers threats. He, in response, calls upon a Saint John Galbert to protect them. And Kathy Bates is like, fuck your white light, fuck your candle, cleaves it in two.
You're doing an accent just as good as Kathy Bates is.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I should say at this point that nobody but Cricket can see Kathy Bates doing all this stuff. But everybody can see the candle flying in two.
Right, which I think is weird because Shelby has physically seen her before.
That's true.
Right.
But that was out in the woods where maybe her power is strongest.
Right, but without Shelby seeing her now, she wouldn't be able to make that connection.
Oh, right. So they have a war of words, her and Cricket, where she claims dominion of the land. He says, honey, this land doesn't belong to the dead. You're the one that are trespassing. She starts breaking windows. He screams, Croatoan, and things quiet down. Now, Cricket claims that he has the answers. He knows where the daughter is, and he can take them to her for the low, low price of $25,000. Holy shit.
$25,000.
Holy shit.
Only.
Holy shit. Lee, of course, could finance this easily by selling her bins, as we discussed last episode.
Yep. Lee has the most rational reaction at all, and she pulls a gun on the person.
And he's got this, you know, you can't blame me if you're peddling drugs. Do you offer them to sick kids for free?
I mean, it's true. How do you come down on this? Like, this guy, he has a gift, but he's got to make a living. Like, you can't go around helping people forever and live on the streets. $25,000 is steep, but how often do you really get a juicy case like this?
Yeah, I guess maybe not take like the $25,000. Maybe offer sliding scale. Maybe offer them some financial. I don't know, but just hitting a grieving parent $25K seems like.
But how much do you really want your child back?
Well, and again, if he's a legit psychic and he's got all this information, I mean, I guess that's the question. Is he really legit, or is this a bunch of parlor tricks?
I think he's legit.
Yeah, in this universe he is. But I'm trying to think from Matt's perspective. Yeah, he could have had his accomplices shooting out their windows with BB guns. Yes, he could have rigged up a trick candle. We already know that the information about her previous daughter is public record. And he also said that he saw this all on television. He was sitting in a cafe watching it. So, like, I feel like he had all the information. Again, right. I think in-universe this is real.
There's all the evidence that they already have on their side without this guy even being there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, if I was playing devil's advocate or a Matt's advocate, I would say, like, okay, there's this guy's kind of a charlatan. But anyway, yeah, he says, Lee hears his spiel about medicine and kids. He goes, I got a prescription for you, and pulls out a gun. Then Matt talks her down by stepping in front of the gun and saying, hey, look, I know you specialize in flipping to crazy, but we can't be killing people in this house. But then he kicks Cricket out, and Cricket vows that not only will he be back, but they will invite him back. And as he leaves, he whispers something into Lee's ear. And I was rolling my eyes so hard that I hadn't fully returned them to the right place in the socket before they were actually explaining what he just whispered. Because right. I thought this was going to be...
I would have been so mad if they didn't tell us what he said.
Yeah. And maybe Murphy felt the pulse of the audience. It's like, nah, we can't make this some kind of cliffhanger.
Right. In real time, if I were Shelby, as soon as he finished whispering, I would have said, what the fuck did he just say?
Right, right.
Tell me right now.
Right. So the camera crew confronts Lee about what she whispers, and she flips the fuck out. But it turns out that they show us immediately what Cricket Marlowe said, and he said, Emily says hello and wonders why he quit looking for her all those years ago. When the camera crew confronts her with this and the fact that she did have a daughter and they've looked this up and it's all matter of public record, she shuts this stuff down and says, we got to stop, and they... do the thing where the camera shifts to like an extreme angle because they're trying to film her in secret.
Right,
and it's,
like
it's all pretty
camera that you're not supposed to notice is rolling.
Yeah, it's all kind of hokey, I thought.
Oh yeah.
And Lee, the actual Lee's performance, Tara's mom, I thought is a little boy. She just plays either idle or full throttle.
I agree. She's not a very good companion actress with Angela Bassett.
It's true. Although Angela's...
Are they going for that, though?
Angela's kind of full throttle all the time, too.
Yeah, she's a very...
But in an engaging, charismatic way.
Right.
So they then calm her down, sit her back in front of the camera, and she explains the backstory here, that she says she was only 17 when she had Emily. She turned 4 around the 4th of July when, I guess, Lee was 21, and she had to run to the grocery store, and she left her in the car for just 5 minutes, and when she came back, she was gone. And she says, be that as it may, even though I've got 2 missing children, that doesn't mean I had anything to do with Flora's disappearance. And I guess I'm inclined to believe her. I would like to know more about this Emily thing, and, like, I don't know, man. When do you think this is supposed to take place? Like 20 years ago? Because even 20 years ago, people knew it was a bad idea to leave kids in a car alone.
Was it?
They get stolen. The car shifts.
I don't think 20 years ago that was the mindset. I think people were more trusting. I mean, 20 years ago, I...
A four-year-old?
Yeah. 20 years ago, I was able to walk 6 or 7 or 8 blocks down to the local convenience store to buy candy by myself.
How old were you?
I was like 6 or 7.
Oh.
I mean... It was just a small town, and...
Were you 4 years old, going down, and slapping a dollar bill and taking your Hershey's?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was never kidnapped, and I don't know. I feel like it's mostly... There have been studies and research on this, but I feel
sure.
like mostly
no,
it's
right.
an invented concept of people stealing kids.
No,
like,
you're
it's
right.
not happening
it
that
does
often.
It does happen.
But the but people being skeptical and paranoid of it happening is way up.
Sure, sure.
In this instance, it did happen to her.
Sure. But I don't know. Leaving, I don't know. Maybe it was a 100-degree day.
I'll steal a dog alone in a car. Absolutely.
okay, but she says, look, I didn't have anything to do with Flora's disappearance. If I did, why would I pay $25,000? Maybe so you could have that awesome alibi in court
mm-hmm.
when they're trying to prove your guilt in the connection with the disappearance of your daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Cricket has got this all figured out, though, because... While he was being shunned from the property, he walked through the woods and got hit by a bolt from the psychic blue, and he finds out that this butcher woman's name's Thomason White. Her husband was the governor of the colony of Roanoke. They had fallen on hard times, and the colonists persuaded him to try to go back to England for supplies. He left his wife, Thomason, in charge. First mistake, colonial America, patriarchal as hell, and ain't no one going to listen to no woman. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take long for the colonists to start bitching about the lack of food and starting to rise up against her. And they all want to move inland before winter sets in, which seems reasonable. But she doesn't want to leave her post where her husband left her. Even her son says, hey, look, Ma, we should probably go inland. And she's like, nope, nope, not going to hear about it. Unfortunately, the colonists rise up against her. They clap her in a what looks like to be some kind of combination scold's bridle and shrew's fiddle. These medieval type of torture devices, like a cage for your face. It's got spikes sticking out of it and an iron bar on your hands so you can't bring your hands to your mouth. You can't eat. You can't drink. And they say they're going to kick her out of the colony. And they force her son to actually put the lock on the cage that's going to encase her his mother's face on pain of death. So, and she looks very disappointed in him. Like, you should have taken the cleaver. I would have taken the cleaver for you. Crickets continue to narrate the story as she's forced outside the colony and she's now suffering from exposure. She's weak from lack of water and lack of food. And suddenly these almost demonic bestial sounds are chasing her through the forest, and she prays to God and offers up her soul because she thinks her death is nigh. Instead, this woods witch, played by Lady Gaga.
A tree nymph?
Uh-huh. Okay. This tree nymph, played by Lady Gaga, steps out with a animal heart of some sort. Maybe it's a human heart.
I assume to be a pig heart.
Probably a pig heart.
Yeah.
Actually. And she commands her to serve and give her her soul. She releases her from this freaky face cage, and Kathy Bates chows down on the heart, apparently sealing whatever deal that they've made.
She must have freed her from the hand chains as well.
Yeah, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Whole kit and caboodle. Yeah. Combination shrew's fiddle and scold's bridle.
If she had run away, would it have just snapped back in place?
Or if she says, no, I'm sticking with God. Although, how would you know that God didn't send the wood sprite?
I don't know.
I mean, it's like that story where God sends the helicopter and the two boats after the guy at the flood, and then he dies. He's like, God, why don't you save him? I sent you two helicopters and a boat. I sent you to Freaky Deaky Woods, witch. What'd you want, woman?
Exactly.
She offered you you needed food. She gave you a heart. What do you want?
Perfect comparison.
It's airtight. Mm-hmm. Airtight theology. Mm-hmm. So she then returns to the colonists with a vengeance. She proclaims herself purified by her torment. And she caves one man's head in with her cleaver, and she slices another's throat. Ooh. She then has her son get down on his knees.
Everyone else just sits around and waits for their cleaver death to come.
I think that's accurate. Would you all rush her at once, or would you just be like cowed?
Four grown men against a woman who's, I presume, has been weakened by having days in the woods.
Her main ability is her willingness. Her main power is her willingness to kill people. That's not exactly a superpower.
I mean, if she goes to swing a cleaver towards her throat and you throw a hand up to block it, do you lose a hand instead of a life? I don't know. It's worth a try.
Yeah.
I have planned my survival a lot.
Plus, I don't think Kathy Bates has a lot of reach. Even with the cleaver.
Right, no.
Like, I feel like I could put my hand on her forehead and she'd just be swinging underneath it, like in a cartoon.
Absolutely.
But, you know, obviously this is pretty bloody and gruesome, so they're cowed. Her son gets on his knees, begs her mercy, and she forgives him, but
she barely asks him to beg for a reprieve like he asked her to.
Right.
It's important, I think.
And she didn't bend the knee to no man. He instantly bent the knee to her. And she says, don't defy me again. And, he says, obviously, I guess we're staying here. She's like, nope, you guys were right all along. We're going to head inland.
The ultimate exercise in futility.
Right, right. Well, you know, if you just came to this epiphany like a couple days ago, we could have avoided the whole shrew's fiddle.
Right, if you guys had chosen to maybe talk it out with me instead of me saying no and you not counteroffering. But
well, she did say she'll hear no more of it. So maybe they're just considering she's an honest person.
That's fair.
You just
to instantly lock her up and let her starve to death.
Totally. So armed with this new info, the quattro of Cricket, Matt, Shelby, and Lee walk out into the woods with the ghostly bonnet. Cricket's leading them. He calls out, and the butcher arrives with her ghostly muscle and agrees to listen to them because she was going to kill him. But then Cricket said, look, you kill us, more will come, because that's the way people work. Mm-hmm. The only way to get rid of us is to hear us out. He says, if you give us the mortal girl and persuade Priscilla to give her up, because apparently they've established that not only does the Thomason know about Priscilla, that they have some kind of relationship. And it's a rebellious one.
Right. He said she was a bastard child, which means she was once part of this group.
Mm-hmm. Presumably Priscilla Snow. or what would a North American bastard be? Priscilla Pinecone?
Priscilla
Eagle.
Good. Eagle.
Unless she's a Ben Franklinite, it'd be Priscilla Turkey. She goes, if you do this for us, we will go away. And Lee says, not only will we go away, we'll burn the house down so no one comes back. Shelby's like,
what the fuck?
Wait, what? And he goes, no, totally. Matt said it was okay. She's like, well, where the hell is Matt? She stumbles off in the woods and finds Matt fucking the shit out of the woods witch.
Woods nymph, tree
the
nymph. Woods,
the tree nymph, while the Polk family watches and furiously tug on their little Johnsons.
Uh-huh.
It's and that's the other thing. It's like the way Kuba is playing this, he looks like a man literally possessed.
Yes, like, he does. He's completely naked, which, like, why would you do that if you're going to have a quickie in the woods?
Right.
He's sweating profusely. He's got a vacant expression on his
just
eyes.
Just staring a thousand
like,
yards
if he
stare.
Made eye contact with Shelby, he would be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Right.
He would do something.
Right. No, I found this.
Recognize her.
I find this completely implausible, her reaction, unless she's actually possessed by the spirits and they're causing
this
discord.
Maybe that's the story arc they're going for, is that she's just...
Yeah,
the villain of the story. worse than the butcher.
Shelby flips out about this and runs off, stomps off, and confronts Matt when she finds him at the house and says, I can't believe you were out there fucking that woman. And Matt's like, what woman? I don't know what you're talking about. Then Matt notices in the background a commotion because the police are arresting Lee, and he turns to Shelby and is like, what did you do? And she says, I don't know what you're talking about. In the most slap-worthy, smug facial expression you can imagine.
Yep,
why go to the... This seems so crazy. Why would she go to the nuclear option and betray her family and everything because of this crazy thing she saw in the woods and a woods full of crazy things that she's seen?
And that's what I'm saying. I think there's some sort of pre-bias against Lee already. I don't know.
But still.
I don't know. At this point, do you think she continues with the search to find Flora with, what's his name? Charles? I'm making that up.
Cricket.
I
don't know.
He's been paid.
He's been
Shelby
paid.
Shelby admitted that she believes every word he said.
Well, are they going to... Is this a way... Because the other thing I noticed is that I feel like Murphy has this thing where he has to figure out how to shuffle his cast in and out of the series because none of them give him a full season commitment except for a few. So I wonder if some of this horse shit is just because, well, you know, Angela Bassett got to go. I need to put her on ice for a couple episodes so I can shoot around her. I know I'll have her be arrested. Some of these wild characters, just like he just has to, you know, go in a 4x4 mode and drive a couple miles over broken, you know, North Carolina swamp ground to get where he's trying to go. But wow, that was a huge character swing from Shelby.
It was.
Yeah. And kind of, I don't know if it was
a character swing. It seems very much in her character, just something we
swingy.
Didn't want to believe she was capable of.
I don't know, man. She's this combination of pig-headed and gullible that is just like my kryptonite. I feel the feeling in my hands and feet leaving, and I can't stand and I start blacking out.
Right.
That's the episode. That is the episode.
I do have one. I think it's non-spoilery.
Okay.
There is a connection to season one here in this episode.
Right.
Constance, which is the Jessica Lange character from season one.
Right on.
And Violet, which is the... What's her name? Thaisa Farmiga?
Right.
Younger Farmiga. The two of them see Billy Dean, which is the Sarah Paulson psychic character in season one.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells them of the story of the lost colony of Roanoke.
This was in season one?
Yeah.
How?
She just tells a story.
Okay.
And says that
I'm surprised no one's mentioned it yet.
that they were able to fight off the demons of the Native Americans by saying Croatoan.
Huh.
So that's where that circles back to.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I'm surprised it didn't come up sooner either. I completely forgot.
I wonder because, like...
In fact, I might not even have that story straight, but that's as far as I know it.
As I discussed in the first podcast, I did some research, and one of the leading theories is that the colonists actually... you went to go kind of live with the Croatoan tribe.
I also have
And I wonder if they're going to be, like, the good... Like, they're going to be the forces of good that, like, take in these... But I didn't... How do you explain the butcher?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I also have two semi-spoilery things.
Okay.
That if you haven't seen next week's preview or you haven't read online, you don't know.
What's...
But if you do, then when would you like to...
Let's do that. We'll do that at the very end of the podcast. So that people can turn off if they want to hear that. Speaking of, let's get in the feedback. You can send feedback in at AHS at baldmove.com or on forums.baldmove.com. We have a show thread for each week. Haganic, I think is how... I mean, there's this was just one of those emails that don't have like a real name associated with it.
I think it's pronounced Croatoan.
The H is silent and actually a C. So listening to your podcast in Chapter 2, this is from last week, of course, I had an idea of what might explain Shelby's sudden 180 towards the house when she's at the hospital. And the hospital scene was after her time getting lost in the forest. Could her time lost in the forest have actually culminated in her being contaminated by the ghosts? Ah, I'm like...
Contaminated?
How so? I'm onto this theory. By the time she makes it to the hospital, she has maybe become an agent for the original Roanoke settlers and being influenced to bring her husband, sister-in-law, and niece down with her. Substantiating evidence, okay, not total proof.
It's the true behind the true.
Not total proof, but an interesting observation if this were to turn out to be true. Shelby is the one who leads her niece out of the living room to do homework and then leaves her there. If Shelby were in her right mind, wouldn't she, scared to death by the haunted house and nuts in the woods, assume no one, let alone a child, should be left unsupervised? Unless she was instrumental in orchestrating her niece's disappearance. And that's what I'm saying. If she's possessed or some kind of agent of evil, it would also explain why she's sowing so much freaking discord. Why she's doing so many weird changes.
Okay.
So,
I disagree wholeheartedly, but that doesn't mean that I'm right or wrong.
Okay. I like it. I like the idea, and it's the only thing that I think makes her character make sense. But
you just want to make sense out of a basic white woman.
The thing that, you know, here's the thing. It's October in this season.
Uh-huh.
I've yet to see her in Uggs or drinking any kind of pumpkin spice.
I've seen her in Uggs.
Have we?
Yeah. She was in Uggs when she was brushing her teeth that one time when she laughed while she was brushing her teeth.
Oh, I think we actually made that. But where's the pumpkin spice lattes?
Well, we don't see her at breakfast every day. Mm. We just see her at dinners drinking wine.
Mm.
You don't know. There's not a Starbucks nearby. It's
really?
In the middle of the...
I don't believe that's the most unrealistic thing.
It's in the middle
of
the North Carolina woods.
They have a Starbucks there.
Do they?
How dare you?
Do they? She crashed her car. She can't drive to Starbucks. She doesn't have a car.
Madeline V.
Unless the tree nymph is delivering Starbucks to her, then I'm back on board with your theory.
She's actually a barista.
Yeah.
She calls everyone's name Croatoan. I have a spiced pumpkin white chocolate latte for a Croatoan. Madeline V. So, never wrote in before, so hopefully I'm doing it right. You did it. Yay! Do you think the seemingly outrageous reactions have to do with the fact that it's from a witness testimonial format? Usually when people give their account on things, it may tend to be exaggerated and lacking details and depth. It's either that or the writing is atrocious. What do you think? Is some of these outrageous reactions because the people are trying, you know, then they're retelling their story where they're doing questionable things, they're trying to sway us with emotion? Or do you think the writing is suspect?
I think the reenactors are actually a little bit more believable performances than the actual real life storytellers.
Mm.
Do you agree or disagree? I'm believing Sarah Paulson and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s and Angela Bassett's performance way more than Lily Rabi and Andre.
Okay.
I think they're a little bit more hammy doing the reenacting. I mean the retelling.
You're right, because all of the, you know, staring and like, oh, this is hard, or can we stop
can
now?
We stop?
Like
yeah.
That's not doing them any favors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the Lily Rabi just saying a sentence and just
Right. Looking at her with her liquid eyes. I just looked
blankly into space for podcast listeners who aren't in the studio.
No, that came across the mics.
Okay.
Nathan P. says, it's been two episodes and you guys still haven't really addressed the fact that Angela Bassett played Cuba Gooding Jr.'s mother in Boys in the Hood 25 years ago and is now playing a sister. She's a real-life vampire, y'all.
Is she playing his younger sister? Because that really, that solidifies it. She is not of this world.
It's incredible how good she looks.
Yeah.
I mean...
Do you think they talk about that behind the scenes? They must.
What I think is super interesting is surely she knows how good she looks. And she's been doing film a long while. So I feel like she probably... Yeah. Assumes people and kind of leans into that.
Stella got her groove back and she did not lose it.
Yes, yeah, she never lost it.
No.
It's amazing she lost it in the first place. I kind of question. I would like to see the evidence that Stella in fact did lose her groove. That she ever had to get it back. So anyway, thanks for bringing that up, Nathan. You continue. If we have to wait until episode 6 or so to get a proper intro sequence,
Thank you.
All I'm saying is it better be baller. I've not yet to see a season that's not.
The intro sequence is so integral to the series. I mean, it's one of your favorite things.
Favorite things. And honestly, the little mini-sodes that they're... Well, not mini-sodes, but the teasers that they think, those were so good I'm really going to get something spectacular for the credit sequence when it finally shows up, if it shows up. I feel like this season they missed an opportunity to call it AHS Murda House fuck with speculating fans even more.
You say speculating?
Speculating Franz. It's late. I'm tired. It's been a long...
It's only 8 o'clock, podcast listeners.
It's been a long week of studio remodeling and sleepless nights and stuff, so I apologize.
That's my fault.
I could be worse. The nurses can't spell. They spell murder, their favorite word, by dropping an R. Murda. May they're New Yorkers.
Or Bostoners?
Bostonites? Bostonians, I think, is the proper terminology for them.
Bostians?
Douchebags?
No. Stop it. Take it back.
I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan. I can't help it. We have a natural enmity. Aaron, better cool it this week. Expecting the world out of the show. Like, cool, did you forget it, about Aaron, the last two seasons you podcasted about? Dumbass. He didn't say the dumbass. I added that.
It was implied.
I just listened to the podcast last week because I'm like, you know what? I wonder if it was good. And I thought that I did a pretty good job of saying that, you know, at this point, I'm with this show where it's kind of like in Walking Dead territories, which means it can surprise me at how scary, funny, awesome it can be on occasion. But or day in, day out. Or it can walk
you up to a cliff and push you off.
Right. Right. Or, yeah, it could do some horse shit cliffhanger that makes me want to quit the show. Uh-huh. So, Kathy Bates' accents are only getting weirder, though I'm going to be so happy when if the show reveals that the real actors are pretending to be bad for the sake of the reconstruction. I'm glad Gaga wore her Enchantress cosplay for the season.
Doesn't she look just like the Enchantress from the Suicide Squad?
She totally does.
Okay.
In fact, I didn't recognize her at all until you mentioned that was her, so I was looking for her. And she also chopped up some of her meat dresses for decoration. Nathan's on fire this week.
He is.
Question of the week. In the event of a TV show named My Podcasting Nightmare, who would you want to play you in the reconstruction?
Charlize Theron would play me.
All right. Fair enough. I think, so back in one of my younger days, many people told when I had hair and was freshly shaven, many people said that I looked much like season 2 Chandler Bing Matthew Perry.
No.
Yeah, I did.
Nope.
Yeah, I can show you before and after photos. I think
whoever plays...
And I still think I look like him if you would shave his head.
That's who you would want to play you, though?
No, I just think he's got a good handle on my personal tics and my physical appearance.
Interesting.
Or who I'd really want to play me is Chris Sullivan, who is the ambulance driver on The Nick, also diner owner on Stranger Things.
That's much better.
Yeah.
Make it him.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's like the ideal version of me.
Okay, now who would you cast for me, in your opinion?
This is fraught with peril.
Because I would cast...
I don't think you really look like anyone,
though. The guy who plays William Riker.
William Riker?
Is that his name?
Jonathan Franks?
Yeah.
Oh, for Star Trek. Okay. Uh-huh. For I'm like, they play for you? That's very
for
weird.
You. Now we're casting each other.
I don't know who you look like. You don't really look like anyone from Hollywood.
No, who could look like me with enough makeup?
Who could look like you with and enough hair. Makeup and hair?
And green hair.
Hmm. Oh, I know actually who you do kind of look like. What's the girl who, the woman rather,
uh-huh.
who plays the main protagonist in Zombieland?
Emma Stone?
Yeah.
Really?
I think Emma Stone would be a good Cecily.
Interesting.
She's kind of got your, she's got your eyes and lips, and I think she could do, you know, with the right
she
hair and
my,
makeup.
My dryness?
Maybe.
We'll see. We'll see how good of an actress she is. Anyway,
so
there's
there
our casting picks.
There's our our podcasting
for
nightmare.
For ourselves and for each other.
Josh F. said, pigs, pigs, more pigs. They should call this season American Pig Story. Pigmen, pig heads, baby doll pigs. Sarah Paulson's character said it best when she said with a defeated sigh, pigs again. Do these hillbilly ghosts just sit around mutilating an unlimited amount of pigs? Do they run a glitter bomb mail type business where you could anonymously send your friends or enemies pig parts?
Awesome.
I actually like the season, but enough with the pigs already. Steph from Houston joins in and says, this show is going to turn me off my bacon with all this dang pig shenanigans. One can never be turned off bacon.
I don't know. I think it's sufficiently creepy. But again, like
thematic.
I said at the beginning of the episode, I need something else.
And also, why pigs?
Yeah.
Because pigs are fundamentally scary. Now, the only thing interesting, and because I was considering this question when I got so much feedback saying, why pigs? The only thing interesting I can think of about pigs is that it's a medical fact that they are very close to human anatomy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of, like, you know, I've heard that you can actually, like they use pig heart valves in human patients.
You know, where they, the livestock that they actually brought over to the Roanoke colony.
Were they pig farmers? They
yeah.
just had pigs?
And did they bring cows? Or
sure,
did
they had
just bring
cows
kit?
And sheep and chicken. Surely. Surely.
Surely? Or do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know. That's a theory.
I just know at some
pigs
point the Indians
just,
taught the pilgrims to put fish,
but
bury fish with their
fact,
corn.
Present
and
day fact. The only animals that live in North Carolina are pigs.
Pigs? Really?
Fact.
All right. All right. I believe it.
Present day. 2016.
Michelle, as some detailed analysis. I love that we're seeing the backstories pluralized because I don't think Kathy Bates will be the last. Begin for the colonist. Speaking of backstories, do you think we'll see one on Priscilla? We really need to know how or why she became this child ghost who steals children. Question, hot take. Is the Wood Witch actually Priscilla?
No.
Why not?
Because we saw baby ghost Priscilla, the little blonde girl, standing on top of the trap door that led Shelby in.
But it was
that.
Through a grimy window, and Lady Gaga is blonde.
All right, no, she's not.
Oh, yeah, that's right, she's not. She most often presents as blonde.
She's an adult woman. This woman, or this little girl, I think, was definitely a
Lady Gaga,
child.
Believe it or not, was once a child.
And she was a child that wasn't scary to Flora to see. And the butcher, Kathy Bates, said that she was a child who was outcast and was a bastard. I mean, all the facts really add up for that, I think.
When you say that she's a tree nymph, is that something you got from, like, official?
Yes.
Okay.
It was.
Okay, because I thought maybe she could have been a wild woman that's from a previous colony. And
for
that's why she would collect children and
yeah,
doesn't explain her weird magic priest powers. But
right. Current mythology, that is what she's being referred to as. If in future episodes they want to redefine her, then sure, absolutely. But
okay.
That's what they're calling her.
Okay.
Officially.
I think you're right. I just wanted to float that because when I first, I started thinking that halfway through watching the episode, and it doesn't seem like it's true, but I don't know. I wanted to mention
I like
it.
Her being a wood witch better than a tree nymph, but
okay.
Either way it works, I guess.
Is Flora going to become a spirit like Priscilla, or is she bound to become like the two boys with their language skills so devolved that they can only scream Croatoan? Which, by the way, that scene with them sucking the pig and then screaming Croatoan, holy shit. Yeah, I was really disturbed by the pigs. I undersold that in the podcast, but I was really disturbed by that.
I thought it was played for laughs the first time you see them with their heads just peek over and they say, Flora!
Yeah.
And then they pan back around to finding them sucking on the pig. It was super creepy and gross.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. And they really went for it. They were showing mouths on pig nipples and just a gross, disgusting teeth.
It wasn't even like a milk
and...
texture. It was like a thicker, whiter, foamier texture. That's what I'm saying.
I wonder if they were
dead.
Really... Like, they were like, that was starting to curdle.
I don't know. Ugh,
ugh. All right. I can feel it in the back of my throat. Ah! Anyway. Since we have this child who is central to mystery, she must have parents. Who are they? I suspect Kathy Bates is her mother. Why else would she appear when Cricket and company were summoning Priscilla? It was also a very what-do-you-want-with-my-daughter moment. Either that or Priscilla is the daughter of Lady Gaga's character, who, by the way, has a lot more power than we were shown in the last episode. Oh, what? Who is the guy that plays her son?
Wes
Bentley.
Yeah.
What if Wes Bentley fucks the Wood Witch and makes Priscilla? That would be why...
I don't know.
Although this still seems like in the visions we've seen that Kathy Bates' character, Thomason, is still in tight with the Gaga Witch.
Okay.
So I feel like if she was calling her daughter Bass, they would have a little bit more enmity than that.
Right.
What do we think about Croatoan? We know it's the name of the tribe of the Roanoke area, but for AHS's sake, could it be a single person? Could it be the demonic spirit that reigns over all the spooky colonists that they have the human sacrifice rituals for? Could Croatoan be a pigman demon, which is why Kathy Bates and crew place the pig heads on their victims when they roast them? Or could it be Lady Gaga? Is Lady Gaga the HBIC of this? What's the eight? Oh, head bitch in charge? Is that what it is?
I guess so.
Of this whole creepy, murdery colonist thing? And now we have Beverly Leslie, Cricket the psychic medium, stirring shit up and it's all breaking bad. Who the hell knows what will happen next? All I know is I was sitting in a dark room alone, wrapped up in a blanket and glued to the TV and scared, like when I watched Blair Witch for the first time. I'm loving it so much and I can't wait for next week. R.I.P. Mason. That's a lot of questions she propounded to us. I like the idea of Croatoan being a person, or maybe that's actually the Gaga Woods Witch character. Because it's not only a tribe, but it's also the name of an island. Is the other thing I found in my research.
Yeah, it could be anything, really. Yeah. Whatever Ryan Murphy wants it to be right now.
It could
now.
Be chocolate.
Yeah.
It could be the Native American word for chocolate.
Or pig.
Or pig. Croatoan pig. That'll do, Croatoan. That'll do. Speaking of future episodes, apparently the big news surrounding AHS is that in episode 6 it's going to turn the show on its head. Supposedly going to have us rethinking what we thought this theme was, and if we thought we knew was happening, we're in for a big surprise. Mm-hmm. Supposed to be a big shock. Yep. Like anything I'm thinking it could possibly turn out to be probably isn't right. I'm hoping the hype pans out and doesn't fizzle. I don't know. It drives me crazy.
See,
we talked about
this
last week.
That makes me bummed about watching the current episodes.
Why does Murphy do this?
Why?
Like, if you were enjoying this season, he says, well, wait until, it's going to get even... I mean, I guess that's
right,
fine,
like,
but telegraphing this twist...
Go into your interviews and say, yep, you got me. This is what the season's all about.
I mean, you can say
don't
you ain't
say
seen
anything.
Nothing yet, or
pull
just...
Pull Matthew Weiner and just let your work speak for itself.
That would be the best. But if you're going to spoil stuff, try to aim for, like, you ain't seen nothing yet, or
right.
Wait until you see what
and
we got later on in the season.
For him
or...
to say episode 6 is where, things go off the rails, or whatever he said, and then for him to follow up and say, and then episode 9 through 10 is a completely
different
story.
He's got his own little arc.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
You're ruining this for me.
Yeah. Hatorian says, watching episode 3, it definitely seems like they're going to pivot this into the whole real world characters. The way they talk make it sound like the documentary is happening in the present. Lee stopping the taping and also talking like they still haven't found her daughter. It definitely seems like they're hinting at the real world playing a different part than just retelling events. So this is this theory that eventually... we're going to run out of the ghost show material and the actual Matt Shelby and Lee, played by Lily Robbie. I can't remember any of these characters.
Andre
Holland and Tara's mom from True Blood.
Fact, that is her name.
That they're all going to be significant.
Maybe.
And they have to. They have to.
I don't know.
They can't just be talking heads.
Uh-huh.
But they're, again, like... I feel like nothing good can come from trying to see where this is going. Just let it wash over us.
Right.
Let's try
that
to
is my opinion.
Let's try to MIB style flash our minds about this episode 6 business, and cuz that's the thing, like if you build it too much in your head, it's going to not work because you're going to be like, "Oh, that's it?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, very rarely does hype pan out. I don't know. I think we all just need a kind of slower roll on that. Amy J. from Oxford says, my first thought when Cricket the Medium showed up is that he might provide a link to Coven as he was from New Orleans. Maybe there's something more to come from that later on if he sticks around. I like him as a character so far. Quirky, campy, sassy, and a breath of fresh air compared to the heavy stuff that Matt, Shelby, and Lee have been giving us for 3 weeks. I agree.
I think Cricket's from New Orleans is not a coincidence. Mm. I think that's that much as has to be true, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was one of the...
Nope.
No, he's not one of the Witches Council guys.
Nope.
He really wasn't?
He was not.
Huh. Okay. I thought I recognized him from that. So he's a new character? He's never been on American Horror Story? Okay.
Correct.
All right. You know who to send the hate mail into if you got it wrong. I don't know whether it's because I'm British myself, but I'm finding Kathy Bates' accent absolutely unbearable.
Nope. It takes all kinds to hate it.
In the space of about three sentences, she went from Yorkshire to Scottish to Welsh to Irish and every weird English dialect in between. Much like with Freak Show, she must have had just insisted on adding that trait to the character, and it makes the whole thing even worse.
She thinks the early settlers had this mutt language before they had these defined types of dialects.
The witch that we really liked, the movie,
yeah, it's fine.
They did a lot of that old English stuff.
Yeah, but they did it successfully.
Yeah.
I believed every accent.
But
I didn't care that I didn't know the
truth, and
I didn't know
and
what
thou
it
and
yeah.
Yeah. Shout.
Yeah. Hers, when they were having that conversation in the big top when she came back, I was laughing.
Mm.
It was so ridiculous. And okay. Seems trite. It did.
I'm scared of Ghost Kathy Bates. Just want to go on the record. She scares me.
That's fair. I've seen Misery.
So it makes the whole thing even worse. An other featured member of the colony ranged from one fairly decent northern accent to one posh London accent to that one guy sounded like he was just plain old American. I know it's nitpicky, but it's really taking me out of the show even more so than the Talking Heads trope. I don't envy you watching this show as an English person, and these people are trying to stumble around what a early American colonial accent. Maybe that's what the little like it sounded like a little dog from every town because they're intentionally trying to go for that. Well, yeah, this guy's from here. This guy's from here. This guy's already starting to sound American. What does American sound like?
Right.
I don't know. I think all that stuff is interesting.
I agree.
Like we went in Shakespeare's day from talking like that to the way we were
just
talking
a bunch
now.
Of dick
and then
jokes.
You go to that, like Chaucer, where it was like almost unrecognizable. I mean, you can understand that it's English, but the, you know, if you just read the Canterbury Tales, mm-hmm. it's really hard
it
to
is.
Piece out the Juan de Franc, what all that crap that they're trying to say. It's like, you know, it's recognizably English, but actually knowing what they're talking about is a much harder proposition. So I think that stuff is kind of fascinating. It's not bothering me like the Baldmer accent was because
okay.
Again, I thought it's kind of cool in a witch kind of way.
Uh-huh.
And everybody should see the movie this Halloween rent. I'm sure it's out for rent now, right? The Witch.
Oh,
The Witch.
The V-V-I-T-C-H.
Yeah. V-V-I-T-C-H.
Yeah. That's a really good movie.
Really creepy, atmospheric, colonial American horror story.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Anyway, that's it for American
it.
Horror Story this
week. All
right,
I got some spoiler stuff.
We're about to do spoilers. I'm going to
We don't know anything that's actually going to happen, but I just have some speculation.
Right, but if you want to avoid the spoilers of Murphy, you can switch off now. Send us feedback at ahs@baldmove.com or on forums.baldmove.com. Cecily, start the spoilers.
All right, I just have a couple things I want to bounce off of you.
Okay.
One, and this is just fun speculation, Ryan Murphy says he's got another super secret season of American Horror Story that he's been working on in between seasons for years.
Really?
American Horror Story has not yet been confirmed for a seventh season, but he's already got a secret season he's going to slip in somewhere in between.
Okay.
I know nothing more about that. I just wanted to mention it because it's in the news. Next episode, in the next episode on,
mm-hmm.
I noticed that... What's her name? Shelby's character, Sarah Paulson reenacting Shelby's character,
right,
is wearing the same shirt in every one of the scenes that they showed her and Matt in.
Yeah.
So makes me think that if you have every clip of her wearing the same shirt, then maybe we might get something more interesting next episode.
Hmm.
Like, you know, you pulled all your clips from the beginning of the episode, second half, we'll get something new and interesting.
I want to chime in on your speculation about this being renewed. I just looked at the ratings. They're comparable to any ratings it's ever had. So, like, I'm going to go back to... Actually, it looks like season 4 might have been its highest rating. It premiered at 6.3 million viewers, and its lowest point in the season was 2.94 million.
Yeah.
Last season, Hotel premiered at 5.81 million, and its lowest point was 1.84.
Geez, that's a huge drop.
Right. But this came roaring back at 5.14, and it's still
going to drop to?
It's still been at 3.2 million, comparable to where...
It's a 2 million drop.
Yeah, but it's always done that. It's always dropped off. Okay. Like season 4, its biggest debuted at 6.3.
Sure, that's all well and good, but they haven't been confirmed to be renewed.
I know what I'm saying is, like, unless this season tanks like the back half of Hotel did again, yeah. I don't see why Fox or FX would cancel it, because it's performing reliably in the slot that they've got it in.
Right, and Ryan Murphy is actually performing well on Fox with Scream Queens. So.
Sure, they got to keep him happy on that. But, like, the show's, the show has grown a lot from its first two seasons, where its peak was 3 million or so. So, you know, what else are you going to show in October?
Right.
It kind of fits, even if it's not great. It's the same reason The Walking Dead keeps sliding by. You put on something with scary shit in October, and millions of people going to watch it.
Right. Final thing I have is your favorite character, Dandy Mott. Sorry, your second favorite character to Twisted the Clown.
Right.
Dandy Mott has been confirmed to have some sort of tie-in this season.
The actual character or the actor?
The actual character.
The character's name the actor's name's Finn...
Whitlock.
Whitlock, okay.
So Dandy Mott's origin story, something like that, is definitely going to show up this season. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I think
interesting.
That's super cool.
What does that have to do with Jupiter, Florida?
Well, yeah. Ryan Murphy also said that this is a season that'll show you the connection to all of the seasons. I mean, we've seen some Murder House callbacks. I was wrong last week.
Interesting.
About the nurses. The nurses were killed. They weren't the killers. It was my mistake. Mm. Yeah. Dandy Mott. Some other... The pig man, obviously, has been a lot of pig imagery.
there has been a lot of pig imagery.
They're working on it, but...
Okay.
I'm gonna stay tuned for all of those tie-ins.
All right. Thanks for the spoiler breakdown. We'll be back next week with Chapter 4. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Have a great weekend.